Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 148. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me from Santa's Grotto is George Ishikus. How's it going, George? I'm glad to see you're in the spirit of things. Fantastic.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
We have to say, we've had to switch George's lights off, which would make it even better because they kept messing up the focusing on his camera. So so anyway, top marks for George for Christmas spirit. And in this episode, we are sort of going to be looking back at a really cool bit of research that George has been involved with. As ever, with when you just spent 6 months doing some good research, the market changes immediately. So there may be some points in which we sort of build on the research, which I think the research is really good, if only to sort of show where 2023 sort of was, and who knows where it's going to go next year. But anyway, George, let's find out a bit more about you. So you are a researcher at Game 7, which is a DAO focusing on blockchain games infrastructure, and you particularly research is what you look at. And you were part of this big 2023 report called The State of Web Gaming. We'll put a link in the notes so people can find that. But can you tell us a little bit about how you got into sort of blockchain gaming research? That would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm George. I'm co-contributor for Game 7. My blockchain gaming story starts in 2018. I was a master's graduate at this point, and I joined an early team of people trying to build a very rough version of Skyrim or Oblivion on chain. Again, different world like 5 years ago. Blockchain gaming is close to 6 years old right now. For me, that's amazing. Yeah. I have been with Game 7 for a little less than 2 years. I have been involved in a number of things, including research related, grants related, and helping this initiative grow. Prior to that, I had some experience with working in the consulting sector with banks and energy companies, but at some point I saw the light, and yeah, I'm excited participant of the blockchain gaming market.
Cool. Okay, so we are going to try something I don't often do. We're going to do some screen sharing to go through the report. Obviously some people will be on listening to the audio version, so I'll try and sort of describe some of the things that you won't hopefully need to look at the report as you're going through it, but obviously if you do want to check out the video version, jump onto YouTube, or there's a version on Spotify, I think. So anyway, let's see if we can do this. Here we go. Right, so there we go, that seems to be working. You see that, George?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the start of the report. I'm not going to go through the preamble, but there's a few things. One sort of key thing that was interesting. Well, there you are. There's George there. One thing that's in the preamble that you sort of do mention, which is that you're not looking at on-chain data, and obviously, you know, there is a lot of on-chain data around games. Maybe could be argued there's sort of too much. So I just wonder if you could sort of unpick a little bit why you decided not to have the on-chain stuff in here.
Of course, yeah. I think that's a very valid question. It's a number of reasons, actually. Number one, the obvious one, there have been some great reports and great research initiatives and databases overall to try to better understand on-chain activity. We tried, as a matter of diversity and just contributing to the public sphere, to just do something different. If we try to deep dive into the composition of on-chain data right now, we will see that, first of all, on-chain can mean different, like something totally different from different games. Game might say you can fund your account using Bitcoin, which on paper is using a blockchain. A game might say all my in-game assets are NFTs. A game might say, you know what, your the outcome of your fight with your opponent now is logged on a specific blockchain. And a game might say every movement you're making on a game, it can be verified on a chain. So these on paper are blockchain games. But if you try to compare those games, the different breeds of blockchain games, one-on-one, you're comparing apples and oranges. The last point would be that I think we're a bit early. On-chain data, fantastic opportunity for us in the future to learn more about the gamers' behavior and hopefully optimize for the experience of gamers. But it might be too early. If you see, I mean, I'm not sure we have a relevant chart, but most Web3 games are not super, they're not really on-chain right now. So again, if I try to give you the truth based on 5 or 10% of the games in the space, there's a very good chance I will give you something that is biased.
Yeah.
So we're saying to people, there is no right or wrong. Just look at this data. as you also observing on-chain information. I think we need both sides of the story to get a more holistic understanding of the space.
Yeah, absolutely agree. From my time back in the day with that radar, it was very, very clear. just you basically have to take it on a per product basis, which is not to say it's not useful, but it's very, as soon as you start, bias is sort of a good word, actually. As soon as you start sort of trying to do comparisons between different products or even even different sort of products on different chains, the whole thing becomes very sticky very quickly.
Yeah.
So you're not using on-chain data. I guess be good. I mean, it's maybe I'm more interested than maybe the audience, but so how have you gone around sort of finding out this data? I mean, I spend quite a lot of time trying to
build up
proprietary data databases and that sort of stuff. It's not fun. It takes a long time. So how are you approaching it?
Yeah. First of all, let me say that I have seen your work with the big blockchain games list, and it's fantastic. I think it has been a great inspiration for us and many other team members internally. It's a super hard job. The honest answer is that we spent from ground zero trying to collect everything and manually verify this. And we identified that this is the only reason to look the audience in the eyes and say, look, we're giving you our truth using a very specific methodology. No agendas, no sponsorships, no partners, just the way that data look today. And that's why it took like many months of work for a number of people that worked so many hours, and I really thank them for this opportunity. But yeah, I think looking ahead and looking in the future, there needs to be a more community-driven and a way for people to contribute to this base. Imagine if, like, we have 20,000 blockchain games. It's not realistic to expect for people to manually create such database. But yeah, we started from scratch, and at some point we said, okay, that's a cutoff date. Let's publish it because this is a never-ending game.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely anyone who's ever worked on a database and just knows that it's sort of like you get it to a certain stage, you go, if I don't release something now, if I wait a month,
then the data
will
be
out of date, and I have to do all that extra work. I just need to get
exactly. if you postpone it for maybe two weeks, it's fine. But if you postpone it for a month, then the data are old news. You need to add more funding rounds, more games, more chains, more whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly for you, you've done this massive 61 page, sort of well presented report, rather than me just writing a sort of a very short Substack or something. Anyway, so this is a good one, and I think you got about 2,000 games. But I think the most interesting thing here is you've gone back, as far as sort of people could go back. So you've gone back on this graph to 2017, and you've and I guess a lot of people think blockchain games have been around for sort of 3 or 4 years, but to get that really early stuff, I think is kind of super interesting. So this is actually a good sort of starting point. So this is a graph of new games versus halted games. I thought it was interesting that you had the halted games in there as well as a sort of a first graph. But anyway, so we have here, going back to 2017 and 2018, so 2017 we have 12 new games, 2018 44, 2019 41, 2020 87, and then a big jump in 2021, 811, 640 new games in 2022, and 223 games in 2023. So I guess that's quite a good example of this sort of big step function that happened during the last sort of crypto bull cycle.
The reason why, first of all, we started at this point is because I want to stress that blockchain gaming is not new. We have new assumptions, new ideas, new business models, new things to be excited or not be excited about, but this has been an ongoing effort. And you would see that many of the big companies today, they have started either super publicly or building more privately from 2019 to 20, even before the Axie moment for the space. Now, when looking to the bigger picture of this chart, I think the good thing is that, like, blockchain gaming, even at a slower pace, it's still growing. It would be interesting to see how the recent market activity might impact this chart moving to the first quarter of 2024. We would be here to try to capture this. But yeah, for me, that would be a very interesting observation moving forward. When it comes to halted games, there are many reasons why games are halted, and I have to note that the red bar in this chart represents teams that they publicly announced that for any reason we have to shut the game off.
Okay.
most likely there are more games that they have halted or significantly decreased the development pace.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you can see, in 2021, despite that certain things happened, also in 2021, we had only a few games leaving. In 2022, with all this macro instability because of those events, including FTX, Luna, and a few more, many people decide to either close their business or maybe pivot to AI and a few other directions.
Yeah. There's one key thing I was going to ask you about, because with the big list, we have started to look at what we call discontinued games. So we have a tab called discontinued games, and we really find it sort of quite hard. We're a bit more aggressive than you, so we don't wait necessarily. We obviously, if teams say they're discontinued, then obviously we add them in. But we tend to go for a sort of metric. If they haven't updated their tweet, if they haven't done a original tweet for 3 months, we sort of assume they're discontinued. Although the first time we did that, we then immediately had someone emailing us saying, "We're not discontinued."
Oh my God, why are you doing this to my project? Yeah, yeah. Oh my God.
Which is so funny. So it's good to know because when I saw this graph, I saw the games halted. I thought that's so let's go through the numbers. So so in 2021, you had 14 games halted. 2022, 157, obviously a big increase. But small compared to the 640 started, and then in 2023, 43 games halted. So this is what you're saying: these are games projects that have been publicly stated. We're not going forward with these games anymore.
Yes.
And obviously there is if there's just games that just basically run out of money and just stopped working and not done anything publicly, there's probably at least double that amount. I would probably hazard.
You could argue that, and yeah, I mean, I think your approach makes sense. On our database, we do have a category called dormant or something, which indicates a high risk, a high probability of this game actually not being actively developed anymore. But we're still waiting for a public announcement before we call time of death.
And without spending too much time on this graph, because we have a few more to get through, I think what is interesting, and actually you do sort of highlight this, I think, a little bit as we go through, is obviously the sort of the people starting projects and the sort of projects that were started in 2021, where we have 811, are generally quite different to the projects that are being announced in 2023, 223, in terms of the scope of the project, the sort of just the experience of the teams, all that sort of stuff is a almost like a generational change in those sort of few years that the stuff you were getting away with in 2021. Just people will laugh at you if you sort of attempt to say I'm making a game and here's the white paper and can you buy my token? I mean, it's not going to work anymore. Cool. Okay, so let's move on. Let's see. I'm not going to go through all these. I'll say there's quite a lot, but some interesting stuff about global distribution. There is one graph I want to pull out here in particular, which I think is very relevant. So this is Web3 game development teams per country over time. So this is a 100% sort of a bar chart. So not showing the absolute number, showing the sort of the breakdown. And I guess two things here that are sort of interesting. I didn't realize, I guess it's from a low base. In 2019, we had quite a lot going on in Japan. So 12% in Japan. And actually now in 2023, we're back to 10%. In Japan, so that's sort of interesting that it sort of was big for a year and then sort of went off very quickly. And I guess sort of a similar region that the really big change in 2023 is South Korea. So South Korea was in fact in 2018 there wasn't anything in South. It looks like in South Korea, and 4% in 2021 and now 27% in 2023. So anything you want to sort of highlight here? How one thing is this is so if I was a one development team, I would count as like one team if I had 10 people or 100 people, I assume, in terms of the underlying data.
I would say this is a limitation indeed. And there is not a universally accepted source of to get the size of it. Maybe LinkedIn, maybe any other proprietary base, but you're right. We're just tracking number of game development teams behind each title. Also, this chart refers to the new games per year, so it does not give the full picture. It gives the snapshot of the yearly activity. So for 2023, we had one third from the US, close to one third from South Korea, which is a big change, and Japan also having a big jump. I think again, I mean, we talk about this a couple of times. Asia is not a surprise in the gaming world by saying, okay, Asia is a big player. Of course, I would say it's not normal to not have Asian countries being a key driver for growth in the Web3 gaming space. Definitely some, I mean, look, you can see this in two ways. You can argue that the lack of friendliness from the US might be a key driver for teams outside of the US to say, okay, here's an opportunity for us. Mm-hmm. Or you can argue that some, I mean, I can't call that necessarily Korea or Japan are super friendly to Web3. They're definitely friendlier than the US. But yeah, maybe this has also contributed to this growing numbers. Because again, if we see the globe on a high level, like APAC has more game development teams than the US right now, which to me, it's very interesting. And again, it shows that Web3 gaming comes to a phase of normalization. It starts to feel more as gaming versus a tech idea. So yeah, for me, there's no right or wrong version of this chart. But for me, this looks promising.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it definitely makes a lot more sense now that this is basically looking at the new projects, where they're coming from, because then that allows you to really highlight the sort of regions. And so you're really seeing that, I mean, a South Korean strong trend is, you know, as this data shows, also been around 2022, 2023. I mean, that's really been the place where they basically all South Korean games companies pretty much have really gone for it. It's not particularly on this slide, but sort of a good place to bring it up, maybe. Generally, how do you deal with China? Obviously, China is, in terms of games, the biggest single games market. In terms of blockchain, it's difficult. Obviously, in general, it's difficult because a lot of stuff just happens within China. Unless you have people in China, you can't, you know, it's very hard to get that information. And in blockchain, obviously, it's difficult because there is blockchain stuff happening there, but whether it's more sort of like private blockchain stuff or enterprise blockchain stuff rather than what we would consider blockchain stuff. So generally, how do you look at China? Do you spend, generally, when I ignore China when it comes to data. I can't even go there. It's not worth me having a look, but maybe you're more optimistic than me.
So when it comes to tracking the information and collecting so we can visualize with those charts, you're seeing the complete picture. So China is not listed because officially there aren't that many China-based teams. Of course, we know from partners and friends that, I mean, China is full of great game developers that are super active. So I don't believe any game studio would be, I'm building a game based on a team in China. If I had to speculate now, in a sense, I would say that there are definitely great studios and dev shops from China that assist other game studios, but on paper are not the ones listed or the ones that officially building the a specific game. What I've also heard from many partners and chains, and this is like universal across different chains, across EVM, layer one, layer two, whatever, is that they're all excited about the moment that China will enter officially the Web3 space, because again, talent and IP is definitely there. Huge market. So my sense is that whenever that happens in 1 year or in 100 years, whenever China is officially back to Web3, or back might be an interesting term. Anyways, when China enters the Web3 gaming space, we will see a strong growth from China. But yeah, for now, this is the situation.
Yeah, it is interesting. I guess the other thing to point out is generally you've got Singapore listed there, and often what Chinese companies will do is list in Singapore or Hong Kong, even though the majority of their team is based in China.
Yeah.
So it's sort of they sort of slightly get around the
We indeed use the official country instead of, I mean, even if we knew that okay, this team is using three other dev shops from the other countries, we use the country of the corporation for the game studio.
Yeah, makes sense. And of course, the other interesting thing on this graph is that, you know, no matter what the year is, the US is a minimum of 25% and a maximum of 42%. So no matter where we are in the cycle, the US is just, you know,
absolutely.
Is absolutely incredible. I mean, obviously, that's where the games are. That's where the money is. So maybe no surprise there. But there's sort of very little sort of cyclic behavior. The US doesn't go down 2% just because the SEC get a bit aggressive. Okay. So this was, I think, for me, you guys spent a lot of time looking at blockchains, which I think to me was the most interesting bit. I do sort of look at blockchains, but didn't, maybe I was looking at more sort of specific gaming blockchains, but even in that. So, okay. So let me try and just explain the graph first. So This is new blockchain gaming networks per year. So I guess we consider this is sort of new blockchains. Obviously, now we have sort of layer one blockchains, layer two blockchains, some layer three blockchains now. So there's quite a lot of infrastructure around blockchains. And here you're looking at newly announced projects, some of which are gaming focused and some of which are general purpose focused. So going back to 2017, say, for example, we had two gaming-focused blockchains launched and 17 general-purpose ones. Let's move to 2022, where we have 37 gaming-focused chains launched and 21 general-purpose ones. 2023, 53 gaming-focused blockchains launched and 28 general-purpose. So now we're up to a total, I think, is this graph is for total networks, 81 blockchains.
Sorry, 81. This year, this is not
81. It's 81 this year. So we're, let's have a look, probably well over 200 sort of cumulatively. I guess maybe some of them have shut down, but so that was really quite a big surprise. Obviously, you know, this year I guess we've seen stuff like Arbitrum Nova, Optimism, you know, Beam, I suppose. Yeah, there's a few that sort of come up in conversation quite a lot, but 53. I mean, have you found those? I mean, that's just incredible.
Yeah. And actually, it's not 53. Sorry, I need to clarify something.
Yeah, got him.
When we say blockchain gaming networks, we refer to two types of networks. I mean, all of those networks, they do aim to serve gaming use cases. But some of them, they say gaming is the reason for me to exist. While others say, I also want DeFi, I want to have healthcare, I want to have shipping, maritime, whatever that is. So the key difference is that ones are just solely focused on gaming, the others are just trying to serve multiple verticals. The number is huge, but we can try to explain it in a couple of ways. I think number one, the previous funding definitely fueled some of this development activity from previous years, and these teams, they had to continue building, they had funding, they had a plan. Despite, of course, the unfavorable market conditions, they continue to building, and at some point they launched the network. I think also a key driver would be the maturity of blockchain frameworks, so frameworks to allow any game dev to deploy their own chain. We have Avalanche Subnets, Polygon CDK, we have the Cosmos SDK for so much time. You have Arbitrum Nitro, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a few others, but yeah, there are many options for game developers to just take a popular and well-established protocol and fork it to their own needs, either as layer two or layer three or never layer one. We also have a chart in the report where we show the industry map, and there is an application specific chain framework. My point is, launching a chain is not that hard anymore. Launching a chain that has specific characteristics is still a big challenge, and creating an ecosystem is a huge challenge. But technically speaking, having your own chain to the needs of your own environment in game is not that hard anymore. There are many, many solutions. And that's why the largest, I mean, if we go a level below and try to understand, okay, from all those networks, what is the actual tech composition, you will see that the vast majority of those are app chains, are chains that have been created for specific game titles or gaming ecosystems versus just being open to anyone. But yeah, I would say this is some key good reasons to explain this strong growth despite the bear market so far.
Yeah, and I guess we would, you know, as sort of infrastructure becomes sort of more specialized, you'd always get sort of people trying to maybe still launch sort of L1s or whatever. But as basically we see more and more games launch their own. I mean, there's lots of different terminologies for it. It's supernets and subnets and chainlets and obviously parachains and all this sort of, you know, we would potentially expect this to start seeing sort of order of magnitude increases. You know, if you think there's going to be, if there's 2,000 games out there at the moment or whatever, then you could easily have, you know, 200 new gaming focused infrastructures launching next year, couldn't you? Because as soon as these games start to get some sort of traction, then they're going to want to have much better control over their own infrastructure than just relying, you know, sort of seen even with Polygon this year, you know, there was some audio stuff going on Polygon and the gas fees spiked and people were pulling down their, you know, stopping their smart contracts because it was getting too expensive to run them and stuff.
Yeah. I think also the use case of Ronin is interesting. Yeah. So Ronin started as a way to make sure that Axie has a great UX for gamers. And at some point, I'm guessing, but at some point I realized that, okay, Ronin has great tools. They have a community, they have leverage. So why not having their own chain? So the mental model going from an app chain, and then if it works, you grow into the rest of the world. I think this is something we will continue to see. If it works for a single game, chances are there will be an incentive and it will make sense to expand this to other games.
Yeah, and definitely, I mean, Ronin has definitely, you know, we'll see where it goes, but definitely the launch of Pixels as a project has, you know, definitely sort of proven that worked in a sense. It was something on Polygon, you know, was probably had some, you know, I didn't really look at the numbers there, but the launch on Ronin is now peaked at over 100,000 daily active unique wallets. You know, obviously some bots in there as well, but that's sort of, I think, increased the activity on Ronin fourfold or something, just that one game.
Okay. It's very interesting. But yeah, on the bot front, I think we have to accept bots as a part of real life. So yeah, I mean, bots are here to stay. Bots are real people, as a few friends would like to say. Bots are part of the equation. It's not something that we have to solve. We have to embrace and move along, in a sense.
Yeah, so I remember very early on when I got into blockchain, same time as you, there was a sort of, I think it was a famous tweet, but a tweet one of the Ethereum guys put out, sort of, I don't know, 10 rules or 8 rules or something of blockchain gaming. And one of them was sort of treat bots as players. And you know, what I always try and focus on is you know, when it say this is daily active unique wallets, and, you know, a player might have 10 wallets, or, you know, a wallet is a bot. And I think developers are getting much better at designing activity that it doesn't really matter whether it's a human player or a bot player, because the bot player either has to show skill or have a lot of assets in order to claim the sort of rewards. So I think there is sophistication around game design that hopefully will maybe I think game developers will still want to reduce botting as much as possible, but maybe over time we'll find some positive ways as well. This is, I guess, talking a bit about infrastructure. This is the, I can't describe this one, the Blockchain Gaming Network Industry Map gives some idea of these many different sort of chains and infrastructures and all the crazy stuff that's going on there, which is beyond my technical knowledge. But anyway, it's interesting, you know, all these sort of industry maps, just to see just the amount of stuff going on there. Okay, let's have a look. This one was, I think, a good one. So new Web3 games per platform over time. So this is looking, again, from 2017 and looking at whether games were on PC, mobile or browser. For this year, 2023, we have 23% of new games on PC, 40% on mobile and 37% on browser. And for 2022, that compares to 33% on PC. So PC's gone down a little bit for new games. Mobile's the same, 41% compared to 40%. And browser has gone up sort of 10%. So how do you sort of start to quantify the trends here? I guess the sort of headline thing we've seen this year is app stores become a bit more open. So I guess maybe the surprise is that mobile isn't higher. Equally, sort of, you know, You have a slide on it later about the amount of blockchain games on Epic Game Store. So we've seen quite a lot on there, although no sort of examples of any games that have broken through on it. So I guess it's interesting that PC's gone down, mobile stayed the same, and actually browser is the platform people have been going for, even though there's nothing sort of structurally that's happened to encourage browser gaming.
Yeah, honestly, I can't read the data too much at this time. There are many ways to explain the outcomes. Some takeaways would be that mobile continues to be a great choice for Web3 game developers. I think the concept of microtransactions in hyper-casual games, you play well using the subway, I think this narrative works, and game developers, they do definitely believe in it. That's why we are seeing mobile being the most popular platform for the past 2 years. When it comes to browser, I think, browser is popular in the Web3 space because it's ridiculously easier to build a browser game than an native one or a mobile one. So as an early experimentation, I think it makes sense for many people to start by browser. There's also another interesting trend that, I mean, the space of fully on-chain games, which, again, is a very, very specific subset of Web3 games. And it's actually very interesting to discuss the definitions and how we call games. We can say Web2, Web3, Web2.5, on-chain, fully on-chain, blockchain games, NFT games. Sorry, there are so many ways to describe the same thing. But the subset of fully on-chain games that both asset state and logic is hosted or programmable on chain in a sense. These are like the vast majority of those are browser. So I would bet that the rise of this subcategory definitely also influenced the growth of browser games. But yeah, I think it's too early because we have a mix of challenges. We have the sometimes we don't have the available tools to integrate with popular game engines. You have the macro pressure of big tech saying, I don't like blockchain, so use the other one. So we haven't seen data points from healthy years for Web3 game devs. Also, if tomorrow morning, both Apple and Google and Epic and Steam says, okay, I'm fine with Web3, I think this will give us the opportunity to better understand the decisions of game devs. But yeah, for now, it's an interesting mix of pressure from both the development pains and also the distribution challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the case of mobile, there's still quite a lot of restrictions around what. Yeah, there's restrictions around what you can absolutely do compared to what developers would want to do. Obviously, on the PC side, you can sort of do what you want on Epic, but then on Steam, you have to have a Web 2 version, so you have fragmentation around that. So maybe the thing about browser is you can do whatever you want. It is easy for people to access it, and maybe with things like Web GPU and stuff, you kind of feel like you can actually get quite a good sort of performance on there as well. So maybe that's why browser's there. But I think you have some slides later on about cross-platform as well. Maybe is it even here? So here's a quick one about Epic Game Store. So this is something that certainly I've been looking at. And in January 2023, there were 10 games listed. So not necessarily live, but listed on the Epic Game Store. First one that went live was Blanco's. And now we have, in October, we had 69, probably gone up since then. So Epic sort of quietly setting itself up for blockchain games. Epic, apart from that, not really doesn't have any infrastructure itself around blockchain. We'll see if that changes. That would be quite a big deal, obviously. Game engines, come on, you go ahead.
So I want to say that for Epic, I think this picture is definitely positive and optimistic for the wider space. And however we read it, it eventually we should come to the conclusion that, okay, big tech and existing players in the gaming space that are happy to experiment and play with Web3 games. But this number has also been definitely impacted by the self-publication shift of Epic. So it's easier to self-publish games on the Epic Game Store. This does not mean that this isn't important, but most likely we're going to see an even higher growth of Web3 games moving forward. The question is whether the idea that, because even Epic that is for now is pro Web3, I'm not sure that there are no restrictions when it comes to going full degen or not. So chances are game developers will still have to have a no blockchain at all version for Steam, a soft Web3 version for Epic, and a full Web3 version from the website or from their launcher. So for me, that's not super sustainable. You can't really scale an ecosystem if every game development team has to maintain two or three versions. And that's why the whole Web3 distribution part and the native distribution of tools, for me, that remains a critical challenge for the space. Solving the distribution challenge in the real way, not just with, I'm allowing you to publish, but you can't do A, B, and C. Mm. We will see next year. But yeah, it's still a big challenge.
Yeah. Cool. So engines, how long we've got to be... We've been talking a lot and not got very far as ever. And so I did want to look at this one because you did mention this as well. So so here we go. So this is something, again, I think one of the big trends for 2023 has been the rise of fully on-chain games. Partly, obviously, that's an infrastructure thing. Partly that's there's now quite a strong community of game devs who want to build fully on-chain and see that as a sort of a concept, a sort of defining concept for what they want to do. So do you want to... I'll just describe the pie chart here and you can talk us through it. So this is active Web3 games per on-chain archetype. So you say games with on-chain assets is 83%. So the vast majority have some sort of blockchain asset. Then you have something called hybrid on-chain games, which you can describe for me in a minute, 12%. And then fully on-chain games, where basically everything, all the assets, all the logic is on-chain, 5%, which is... that would be, if you had 2,000 games, that'd be 400. Not nothing, but actually more than people think. But
Go ahead.
No, I just want to say probably the highlight here is, so you have fully on-chain games where everything's on-chain. We have games with some on-chain assets. What do you mean by what are the hybrid games that are 12%? So that's quite a large sort of chunk.
Yeah. So with Hybrid, we refer to games that beyond just the NFTs and the tokens. So with the on-chain assets, we also have parts of the game state on-chain. So let's say we have a battle and you are the winner, this will be locked on-chain. Let's say your sword will have specific traits. Instead of just using your servers, you will capture this information to the chain or to an environment that more than one people can verify. You don't have to trust the game developer. So yeah, if we have to oversimplify, it's like assets, state, or logic. If you have both three, you are a fully on-chain game. Just to clarify on the numbers, we count only the games that they have something playable or they have announced their plans.
Okay.
So the actual number, it doesn't make sense for you to benchmark based on the 2,000 games on the base. This is a lower number as it refers only to the active games. And I just have to say, there's no right or wrong way. No one should argue that fully on-chain is the future and is the good way. And if you're just using NFTs, that's not truly blockchain. I think any discussion about this, I think doesn't make sense. It's not realistic. I would be ridiculously happy if I was playing a very successful web, an actual game that I played for hours in my life and just have NFT to trade with my friends. I think this is a fantastic first step that is huge enough to onboard literally billions of players. We don't necessarily need like to use every potential idea of the block and every creative way to integrate the blockchain stack in the gaming backend. But yeah, there are differences into the technical architecture of different games. Hence, we propose this this classification.
Yeah. No. Good. No. Yeah. I think I absolutely agree with you. Entirely the case. That it sort of depends on the team, obviously, and their level of expertise and obviously what sort of game they want to make. Some things are really going to work in some ways. Some ways, I think we actually have this on the genre stuff that we'll have a look at later. But I think it is interesting now that there is now very much, like, sort of call it this spectrum from sort of web 2.1, sort of a term that's sort of used maybe sometimes disparagingly, but games with the tiniest bit of blockchain and to these fully sort of crazy autonomous worlds that will never stop, and that sort of and I think that's sort of great that you have that sort of that range. Although I guess sort of what I found interesting is, on a personal level, I kind of find the innovation going on with the fully on-chain stuff is clearly the rocket science type stuff, and that's, I guess,
I mean, also for me, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's because often the thing is that people say, oh, you know, what games can you make that you couldn't make without blockchain? As if there's nothing you couldn't do. And you go, and then, I'm not an expert in this sort of stuff, but you just very quickly explaining some of the fully on-chain stuff is clearly the composability and the all that sort of stuff, interoperability is clearly.
Yeah.
You know, whether a million people could play those games, I guess will be the question. We'll wait and see. But conceptually, that's the fascinating sort of aspect.
For me, the activity on the full on-chain gaming front is not so much about gaming, but it's more about the whole ownerless, serverless, but ownerless or fully autonomous social system. It doesn't have to be, strictly speaking, a game. It's just a system with rules and with evolution that is not defined by a single dice by pressing the button. I mean, and that's why we have supported with grants like many teams building with all the existing tools in the full on-chain gaming space, because it's a fantastic way to innovate and stress test the blockchain stack. It doesn't matter if it will lead to the next free-to-play like idea that will create billions for the gaming industry. I don't think that's the point. There's a good chance, though, that something from this process will end up being a great use case that also has commercial potential for the space.
Absolutely. Right, I'm going to start going a bit fast now, because otherwise we're going to take up all evening, and that's not fair. So this is a good one. So some genre stuff here. The most popular sort of primary genres, I guess genre now is a slightly more complicated thing than it was sort of 10 years ago, but you're saying 22% of games are RPGs, and 70% is action, 15% strategy. Trading card games, actually, no, there's a graph here. Card games, 6%. I was a bit surprised by that. I always think there's loads of trading card games, but maybe I'm just over-indexing the amount of card games. But it definitely, I guess this has a lot of core sort of genres in there. Although first-person shooters are not listed in here. Where would they be?
It will be a subgenre under action.
Yes. Oh, okay. Under action. Okay. So they are.
Yeah. So in fact, the discussion about genre is interesting, because it's challenging, because there are different ways to define what a genre is or what are the main genres. What we try to do is follow some a framework that we think is inclusive enough to cover the whole space. And also, we also take note of the primary genre in this case. So a primary genre is the most dominant one, but then you might have five more subgenres. So yeah, my point is, this is an indicative, this is an effort to practically capture the space. It's not necessarily the truth. And we do understand that different people might see the space in a very different way.
And one of the funny things when you do try and do this, which I have tried to do, is sometimes you come up with a very different genre than the game maker suggests its game is, which then becomes a little bit weird, isn't it? You're saying, well, you said it's this, but it looks really much like I would define it as this.
This also happens to us. But for I mean, we try to optimize for consistency, not for accuracy all the time, because again, accuracy can be a tough thing to achieve when talking about like conceptual things like genre.
Good point. So this is look at that one. So fully on-chain games. We like to talk about them because we think they're interesting. And that's a little bit. I guess this sort of skews slightly the other way that now for fully on-chain games, so games where everything is on-chain, all the assets, all the logic, 40% strategy compared to 15% RPG. And I guess clearly that plays into the fact that if you're putting everything on chain, there is just a sort of some things you probably really find it quite hard to do, like shooters. And if you have lots of assets on game, then that's going to be more like a sort of strategy crafting type thing. So that was quite an interesting one to see.
Having a full game on chain is definitely very challenging for the chain itself. So genres that optimize for slower movements with clear cuts between different movements are definitely a better fit, but we're seeing great progress. And the first, let's say, the first version of full on-chain blockchain games, they tried to do the very basics and say, okay, I'm trying to build something. This is a prototype. We will see. Now we're seeing games that look more than actual games, and it's very promising. So I do expect this number to normalize and come closer to the bigger picture over the next years or two.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Should we look at? No. I'm gonna try and zoom through. Otherwise, we're gonna be here for a while. This is chains. I think it's probably a bit too detailed for me, but it's what we talked about before in terms of sort of what things are split between sort of app chains or L2s and threes. Yeah. There we go. There we have a graph. So I've got to look at this one. So the Web3 games and networks per layer. So we're seeing. L3s coming in. That's the number of L1s coming down over time. So 83% of games announced all time have been on L1s. Oh no, you go through this one for me because I'm not reading this one correct.
So on the left side, we're seeing the games, the layer that each blockchain game has picked today. That's an all-time snapshot. So 83% of games are using layer one networks. The reason why this sums more than 100 is because specific games might use more than one chain, and these chains might be of a different kind. I think the key way to read this is that the vast majority of game developers of blockchain games right now, they don't really care about the layer. They might find great potential into the promise of using a layer two versus a layer one, but relying on an existing ecosystem like the Ethereum ecosystem instead of spinning up their own ecosystem. But yeah, so far, game developers are focused into selecting the game that makes sense for their game stack and their business plans. I don't believe any game dev works up and say, okay, I need to use a layer two of these characteristics. They say I need the best chain for my game. The chain that could be cheap, they can have a great UX, they can users can easily have port liquidity from other chains or from exchanges. These are the things that define the selection criteria, if you ask me, compared to the technical characteristics of the chain. On the networks front, on the right side, we're seeing very strong interest on layer two and layer three networks. So engineering teams are launching more layer twos and layer threes, but so far game developers, they are very interested in the layer two space, but they heavily rely on layer one networks so far. At least that's what the data tells us right now.
Yes, no, I see that now, yeah. And I guess we're going to see that change pretty quickly, because for most of 2023, gas on Ethereum has been, you know, very low historically the last couple of years. So you've been able to sort of mint your NFTs on Ethereum and then run some logic on L2s. But probably now for the next year, gas fees on Ethereum are going to be back to the horrendous levels where you can't really do it. You can't really do anything for assets that are under, you know, $1,000 or something. So that probably next, we're going to see an acceleration. We're going to see the games in 2024 graph will be a lot more like the networks announced in 2023 graph, in the sense that the L1 is going to flow into the L2s. Good. Okay, I learned something today. Virtual machine adoption. This was much too technical for me. okay, so this was, again, spend a bit of time on this. And this is interesting because, you know, I totally agree with this data, but I think it's, for me, this sort of, so this is the number of sort of games per blockchain ecosystem. This is saying Polygon is number one with, you've got 250, over 250 games on that. But to me, this is very much a lagging indicator. So I think, this time last year, BNB, which is in number two on this graph with about 200, at the start of 2023, actually, BNB was higher, was the highest, and Polygon swapped with BNB. And I would probably expect for early 2024 that something else will be there. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I think people have sort of announce their chains, and then 6 months later, you find a lot of people moving on to the next thing. and I guess what we've just been speaking about is, you know, if Arbitrum here is in has about just under 75 games announced, and I'd expect that to, yeah, that could easily double, you know, even triple, couldn't it? And there's not Optimism's not on here at all. And Ronin.
Yeah, I mean, for Optimism, there is this. I mean, people tend to say Optimism, but they don't necessarily refer to the Optimism mainnet. They refer to Optimism, the OpenStack based chains.
Okay, yeah.
That's why. So the mainnet does not have a number that put them in this
different sort of
in the chart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think overall, it's important to know to the audience that there is no magic way to identify the best chain. What we're showing right there is like the decisions of Web3 game developers that we were able to verify. Theoretically, many game devs might be building on a new chain that we don't know about, and they will announce it in 2 months. Also, there is a clear distinction between the developer's choice and where users are. In theory, chain A might have 1,000 games, and chain B might have 2 games but 1 billion users. So tell me, what is the most successful one? The one that has many game developers or users? All I'm saying is that there is no universally accepted way to classify chains. That's why we want to be clear that this is that we just track the decisions of Web3 game developers so far as a proxy of popularity.
Yeah, I think it's a good snapshot. It is a good snapshot, I think, for people who are new to the industry, just to see, you know, when we're talking about how much infrastructure there is out there. Obviously, most of it doesn't have many announced titles for, but you know, these. How many there are, a dozen or so, have at least sort of 20 games announced for them. Some of them have hundreds. And you sort of get an idea of how the thing sort of boils down. And this isn't just people sort of releasing white papers these days. This is, you know, people building sort of proper projects on, you know, we all might have our own particular blockchain that we think's best, or we have the biggest bags on, or something like that. But but there's quite a lot of serious sort of stuff out there. Sorry, I'm just getting around my PC. Cool. Okay, let's do this one as well. So this is sort of breaking down into the L2s. And this one clearly shows that the sort of number one, what you're calling L2 ecosystem, is immutable. And that's not a great surprise to people, because they've been around since 2018 and they are very much positioned themselves as the sort of the gaming blockchain.
Yeah. This is the mix of both Mutable X and the newly announced ZKVM chain. I think the layer two ecosystem is very promising. We will have the chance to stress test our assumptions as an ecosystem the next year. Where, I mean, so far we have the layer two being the great future for scaling Ethereum. Now I think it's a good opportunity to see exactly how it works. And again, there are many decisions: layer one or layer two, layer two or my own layer three, EVM and EVM. I know it's chaotic, and most people say, I don't really care. I want either to build a great game or to play a good game. But yeah, for me, 2024 will be the year where we're going to have the chance to actually stress test all our assumptions and try to get closer to market validation for blockchain as a concept overall.
Yeah. I think the other thing will be very interesting is that as soon as you start, assuming that we do have some sort of fairly successful sort of new games coming in, then that obviously changes. You know, people have made the decisions about blockchains based on sort of technical aspects or funding or something.
Technical, or maybe token. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we might see that the token price or token performance makes people forget about anything and say, okay, that's the way to do this because if it works for them, I will do it also for my own project.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's how the sort of the, you know, I would sort of say if there was only, you could pick any of the 2000 blockchain games, and if that was the only blockchain game there, everyone would go, this is amazing. This blockchain stuff's amazing. But as soon as you have two, then you sort of fragment it. And as soon as you have 2000, it's very fragmented. But you have one big hit, and I guess we see that with Ronin and Pixels, then that immediately draws attention to people, and they're just like, this is a success. I want to sort of be there. Doesn't really matter what the technicalities of it all are. So I guess that's what we're looking for.
Absolutely,
in 2024. Yeah. And this is, I mean, we're really running out of time now. I just want to highlight some of these things. So game migration. This is something that we sort of I look at quite a lot, and sort of mentioned in passing there that you do. It's sort of funny. Some games have announced on one blockchain, moved to another blockchain, and then moved back to the old blockchain or moved to another. You start to see
many such cases.
Quite a lot. So here we have the all-time high number of Web3 games migrating to different networks. So obviously in 2019, there was one because there was not so many networks. 2023, 65 games have moved network. And I guess in this one, you're not counting cross... You're not... This is moving...
Let's say you're building on Polygon and you say, I want to also integrate Avalanche, Mainnet, and BNB. But while also keeping Polygon, we will count this as an expansion on our database, not as a migration.
Okay.
Because in some cases, moving between EVM chains might be like five lines of code. I don't think it makes sense. But when you're saying, okay, scrap the existing work, I'm going to launch on a new ecosystem and adopt the new tech stack, I think this is an important decision for game developers, and that's why it's important to capture this.
Yep.
Many migrations are not public. So I think the actual number is bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to read behind the numbers, if you asked me 1-2 years ago, I would say to you, okay, whoever is paying more gets the game, like a fight between grants of different networks. I mean, I'm not judging, just saying that the game developer said a key reason for me to decide was the financial support I received from the ecosystem. I think right now, a key decision criteria is the readiness of the chain to actually function. So if a game dev... has the content ready in the next 6 months, and they know that, okay, they need a performant environment so they can launch their own token, launch their NFTs, and have an economy to eventually make money and grow their ecosystem. They need something that it works or that has the promise to work at a specific level of scale. So that would be the key driver for this year, in my opinion.
Did you say, I think this is an underestimate, and next year will be even more as all this sort of stuff moves around. Okay, I think at this point I could go through all this sort of stuff and we could chat about it. Funding, don't start me on funding. We're already 52 minutes in. I think we'll leave it there, George. We've brain dumped. We pulled enough out of your brain for this particular podcast. I would just say I'll put the State of Web3 Gaming report link in the notes. So please go and find that. You just have to open up, stick your email in. You can get that one. Thank you very much, George, for your for your knowledge and for your time.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
And thanks to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. I just find all this sort of stuff fascinating, particularly the data. But in general, I think blockchain gaming, as hopefully you have gathered from today's talk, is a big thing in boom times and in not so boom times. It looks like we might be going into another boom time, so particularly exciting, but not any more exciting than it has been in 2023. So please subscribe to the channel and see what's going on. Got a few more episodes before 2023 ends, so ramping up. So keep it here. See you next time. Bye bye.